At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
All right. I am so excited to be here with Ange Bourgeois. And I've been practicing your name. I told you this before we hit record, so I'm glad I got it right. From Catching Made Simple. How's it going, man?
It's going great, dude. Thanks for having me on, Francisco.
Yeah, I'm so excited. And like I told you before we were recording, I have seen your content all over my social media feed. And it's been great, you and all the other people and coaches that you had at your camp recently have been really like blowing up in a good way. It's been really fun to see. Before we kind of touch on content, where does your baseball story begin? Like, where did this whole thing start for you?
Yeah, like at the very beginning?
Sure. Summarize it for me.
Yeah. Okay. So, man, I grew up as a baseball kid, 100%. So my dad is a huge baseball fan. He's a Dodgers fan. So I grew up bleeding Dodger blue, as they say. And we did baseball everything. Like, we would play catch. He would give me baseball shirts. It was like baseball everything growing up. And so I was kind of good. I was an infielder and pitcher, and I was having success as a kid. So then it's even more fun because you're good at it. Mm-hmm. You're like winning, you know. And then my dad actually opened up a baseball academy in Utah when I was from like 7th grade to 9th grade, and then 2008 hit and the business had to close down, right? Because 2008 was just crazy. Mm-hmm. Baseball's in my blood. It's been in my blood from the very beginning. And started out as an infielder, came to college, was an infielder, played like a little bit of first base and DH to get my bat in the lineup when I first came in as a freshman. And then my junior year, I transitioned to a catcher. So I only caught for like 18 months, learned from essentially the ground up. I had caught like a few bullpens in high school for some of my teammates. And other than that, had never caught. So wow. I caught at a D2 level and had to learn it from scratch. So now it's fun to teach it because of all the pass balls and all the mistakes and troubles that I went through as I was learning.
So you didn't really catch at all, like in high school, till you got to college. Mm-hmm. How was the recruitment process for you? Because you went to Biola. Like, were there other colleges or universities or JUCOs that you were interested in?
Yeah, there were. So I had really good grades and I had really good test scores. So I was looking at some like high academic schools as mm-hmm. well, but both my parents are from Fullerton, California. And so we grew up coming out to California. And I wanted to come back out to California to play ball because it was warm mm-hmm. and I grew up in Salt Lake City. So like you had winters, you had cold, and I was looking to get into the sun to play. I actually went on a trip out like back east over Christmas. And when we went, it was the worst weather ever.
This past Christmas?
It was when I was talking to schools.
Oh, sure.
And I went out to this college and it was like sleeting hail, like sideways, and it was windy, like so windy.
Wow.
And I was like, man, I don't want to come over here. So yeah, came out to California. My final two choices were Westmont and Biola.
Okay.
And I just had an incredible experience with the coach and the team, and I felt like they wanted me more too. And so it was a no brainer for me to go out there.
Yeah, I actually had a friend who went to Westmont several years back, and that's also a Christian or religious school. Was that mm-hmm. something that you were, was like a necessity? Like that was something you really wanted to do, or that just happened to be the two choices you were kind of left with?
That's a great question. It really wasn't, because my thought process was, you know, like wherever you go, you're going to find the crowd that you want to be around.
Sure.
And so like my faith is important to me without a doubt, but that wasn't really like a huge determining factor in where I went to college actually. However, I will say when I talked to my then head coach at Biola, one of the things that he had told me in the recruiting process that really stuck with me was, hey, you're about to enter the four most foundational years of your life. Mm-hmm. And you will become like the people that you hang around with. And the people that you're going to hang around with is your team. So when you look at the team, when you look at the people on the teams that you are evaluating to go to school there, do you want to become like those people or not? Because you will become like them because yeah. you're going to spend so much time there. So then, you know, then I had an incredible experience, made some great friends at Biola, even while I was still in high school, throughout the recruiting process, meeting the players, we kept in touch. And so I was like, yeah, this is where I want to be.
That's awesome. And you mentioned your faith and stuff, and I was watching a video I Googled your name, and like, it's like maybe the only interview that I saw, and it was not even an interview. It was you in like the auditorium at your school and a couple other student athletes talking and comparing sports to, your walk, your spiritual walk and stuff like that. So I thought that was pretty cool the way you were comparing it and the way you kind of, I felt like it was almost like a message. You were like preaching a little bit. I thought that was kind of cool.
You know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah. I got to speak at a chapel. It was super okay. cool. And it was my buddy's birthday. So I think the first thing that I say is my teammate's birthday. And I got up there and I had never been like in front of lights like that before. And so I get up and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't even see. Cause it was like pitch black in the auditorium mm-hmm. and you got these big lights at you. And I'm like, wow, I have no idea. And then I'm like, where's Phil? Happy birthday, bro. I promised I'd give you a shout out. But yeah, absolutely. I think sports as a whole are just one of the best training grounds for life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's so many parallels between faith and sports and life. And that's just like how my brain naturally thinks. So, you know, like one of the things that I don't think I talked about this in the chapel message, but you know, one of the foundational things as I was transitioning to a catcher was I learned really quickly that like my stance was super important. And so I had caved in knees at the beginning because to get into a catching stance, you have to have tremendous mobility. And so, the issue with the caved in knee is one, it puts pressure on your knees because the pressure's on the joints rather than like the joints being in alignment and having the muscles absorb the stress. And so it's bad that like, that's why catchers have bad knees. It's because they have bad mobility, which then puts them in a bad stance, which then puts the pressure on the joints. So, that's something, but then also it makes it harder to receive because then your left knee gets in the way and it hits your left elbow. And so I had to like figure out how to open up my stance. And as I was going through that, I was just learning. The Sermon on the Mount is probably my favorite passage in the Bible. And at the very end of it, you know, Jesus concludes his message and he says, hey, you heard everything that I just said.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is like the Sunday school song, right? You either build your house on the wise man
yeah.
builds his house on the rock, the foolish man builds his house on the sand. And what it says is whoever hears these words of mine and acts on them. Builds his house on the rock. Whoever hears them and doesn't act builds on the sand. And most people, if you ask them, hey, do you know that story? They'll say yes. And you say, hey, could you tell it to me? And they'll say, whoever hears it builds it on the rock. Whoever doesn't hear it builds it on the sand. But that's not how he actually tells the story. Both hear it. One acts, one doesn't act. And so as I was learning and going through all this stuff, learning how to catch, it was just so apparent to me that, like, hey, you know, my stance is so important physically in my stance, but yet at the same time, like, I know what I have to do. And if I don't act on it, then like the ball is going to go to the backstop and I have to turn around and go chase it and get it back. So that was like such a foundational piece of text for me that was like so literal, you know, like your foundation is going to crumble and you have to go get the ball if you don't do it right. So
that's awesome.
So yeah,
that's a great illustration too. And touching on the catching part of it, what made them decide to make you a catcher? And like, what was your initial thoughts? Cause I've talked to guys for like, I used to be a pitcher and they're like, no, you're going to be a first baseman now or vice versa. Right. What was your reaction to that?
Yeah. Well, you know, what's hilarious is literally like, I don't know if it was the day before or a few days before, but I was playing summer ball in Ohio and it was like 100 degrees, like 80% humidity. Mm-hmm. And it was so hot. And I see these catchers in their gear, like running back behind home plate over down to the right field line to like go get blocking practice in. And I was like, man, you got to be a different type of person if you want to catch. Kid you not, said those words to a teammate standing right next to me. And then it was either like the next day or 2 days later or something. My head coach from Biola calls me and he says, hey, Ange, I got a serious question for you. Do you have a minute? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And he says, what would you think about catching? And then at my work, we call this vanguarding, where it's like getting ahead of all the potential objections, like whatever thoughts, worries, fears, concerns they might have, like, we're going to say that at the beginning. He did that to me. And he was like, hey, so look, it's going to be a really hard transition. The skill sets of like footwork, strong arm, good baseball IQ, leadership, like the skill sets transfer really well, but it's a completely different skill set. You're not going to be taking ground balls. You're going to be in a catcher squat blocking balls. And he's like, and it's really difficult. Like, there's a risk that if you transition, that you could get caught in between, that you couldn't play, that, you know, it could be a really bad experience as you finish. And then he finishes and he's like, but I wouldn't ask anyone else to do it. So you're the only person that I'd ask to do it because I know your work ethic and I know your attention to detail.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, give me a day or two. Let me pray about it. Let me think about it. And then I was like, all right, I'm in. Let's do it.
Did you guys just like lose a catcher last minute, or did he just think that you as an individual would be a better catcher than infielder?
Yeah, so it's kind of a mix of all of those factors.
Yeah.
And so we had two catchers that were seniors at the time, and we had just lost our starter from the year before. And we had also just gotten in a bounce back transfer from the University of Utah. And so now we had four like solid infielders and three spots in infield. And we had two senior catchers and then like two freshman catchers. And at the same time, my skill set, I was much better leader and communicator, baseball IQ guy than like actually my tools per se. And I ran like a 7.2. So like if you're playing middle infield and you run a 7.260, then like you're not going to be able to go play on.
Yeah.
And so it was like a push and a pull from both ends of like, hey, we got an extra dude from Utah and he's really good. He like hit a bunch of home runs for us that year. And then we had kind of an opening back there behind the plate. My skill set was better back there. In terms of like the projectability, and I wanted to go play on, and I knew that my speed was kind of a weakness. But if you're on a 7-2 catcher as a 6-D, like, hey, that,
yeah,
that's actually not, that's not too bad. It kind of flips my weakness into a strength. And so, plus, like, again, I love the leadership. I love the communication. Working with the pitchers, I felt was going to be a strength of mine. So, mm-hmm. so it was kind of all those factors together.
Yeah. What was the most difficult thing that you learned as you were learning to become a catcher, where you're like, oh my goodness, like, I had no idea it was going to be this difficult in this particular area.
Yeah.
Or was it everything?
Oh man, it was tough, dude. It was tough. Looking back, knowing what I know now, if I could coach myself along the way, it would have been so much easier. And I mean, that's partially why I'm doing what I'm doing now, because I learned so much through the process. But let me tell you a story, and this will kind of, this may resonate with you, but so the very first day of practice, we didn't have a very good pitching machine. We had like one of those old two-wheeled jugs machines.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Almost like the one that you put a football through, but it was baseball size. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so our coach, he's an awesome coach, but I don't think that he knew how to teach catching very well, because not very many people do.
Yeah.
Right. And literally the first day of our fall practice, I have like red shin guards on, red Easton shin guards, a black Wilson chest protector, and like a two-piece mask that are also different brands. So like, I'm just like thrown out there very, very new. I've been working and stuff, but haven't gotten a ton of reps. And our coach dials up both wheels on this jugs machine to 90 and 90. And he has it like on the grass. So it's not 60 feet. It's, and I don't know the exact measurement to the grass, but it's like on the grass, throwing 90 miles an hour from both wheels, which means that the ball's not spinning. So it's throwing a splitter or a knuckleball at 90 miles an hour from in front of home plate. And my thumb got busted super hard. Another one of our catchers took a ball straight to the kneecap. Another one of our catchers got hit in the cup, and another one of our catchers just missed it and it hit him straight in the chest.
At that point, were you thinking like, I made a huge mistake?
I was thinking like, oh my gosh, we're in for it. So that was something that honestly kind of hurt me for the rest of my time, because mm-hmm. once you hurt your thumb, it's so tough. And then there was another time where I was catching a bullpen and we had a hard thrown freshman and we were working on throwing inside. My coach gets one of those dummy batters mm-hmm. and puts it right up on the plate and he throws it and it hits like the batter's arm and like ricochets down and hit my thumb. And I remember I literally grabbed my glove and threw it on the ground. And I called my dad that night and I was like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, I literally can't feel my thumb. This is so hard. Like, I don't know if I might just go back to second base.
Yeah.
And then he was like, all right, let's go get some work in. So then me and him, we spent a bunch of time and kept rolling with it.
Wow. But your dad at this time was in Utah, or was he also in California?
He was in California at this point.
Okay. Okay. Wow. Yep. Good for him for not just letting you give up, but, you know, working on it, because
looking back, I'm grateful. I don't know if I really would have quit, mm-hmm. but that's what I was feeling in the moment.
Oh, for sure.
Not want to do this. Yeah.
And like, we've all been there, like, not necessarily in sports, but there's been times when we're all like, you know what, why am I even doing this? Or for whatever reason, you know, it's so easy to be like, all right, I give up, or I'm quitting in that moment. But then when you backtrack and take a little bit of time, it's like, okay, am I really going to quit? But and especially in baseball, it's so huge, like the mental aspect. And I always talk and ask guys who have played or who are playing, like, how do you deal with that mental side of baseball? And just like from your story alone, just talking about how you wanted to give up, but you obviously didn't. Like, how did you deal with like the mental side of things?
Yeah, well, I would say the biggest challenge mentally that I faced was that we were playing at a really high level, right? We're playing D2 college ball with like a bunch of really good teams, like mm-hmm. CalBAP, Azusa Pacific, Point Loma. You know, CalBAP moved on and they were D1, won their conference like first 2 years or whatever. But the biggest challenge that I had mentally was that because I was new, I was making mistakes, and then my team would get mad at me. And then I would like feel this pressure, like sometimes from specific players, sometimes from specific coaches. But when you feel that pressure, what happens is you are no longer focusing on the ball, right? You're focusing on like the dugout, or you're focusing on like your body. And that's the worst thing that you can do. Like, you want to get external rather than internal in your mind. Like, you want to be just have all your focus on the ball. But you know, when you start making mistakes, and everyone has experienced this at some level, but when you start making mistakes, you start getting tight. When you start getting tight, then you're slow. When you're slow, then you make more mistakes. And then it can just go like that really quickly. And then if you lose your confidence back there, then it's really tough to get it back, especially if there's like little voices in your head, you know, of like, oh, gosh, what if I missed, you know? And so when you start going down that rabbit trail, that's the dark spot on the field, without a doubt. And what I would try to do, right, and I think sometimes it works, sometimes I didn't. I think if I had a little more time, it might have worked a little bit more. But you just have to figure out how to get back to the present moment. That's the only way, because normally when you are not playing well, you're either looking back to the past, thinking about the mistake, or you're looking forward to the future about the potential consequence of, hey, am I going to be in the lineup tomorrow? Or, you know, is my coach going to say something when I get back into the dugout? And so those are like the two ways that you don't want to go mentally, is either back to the previous mistake or forward to the potential consequence that you're imagining. And you just have to figure out how to get back to the present.
That's awesome. So after college, what was your transition from as a baseball player to then life outside of baseball?
Yeah, so I got married to my beautiful wife. We're actually having a kid, our first daughter coming up here in February.
Congrats!
So we're like closing in within a month of a due date, which is crazy.
Let me tell you this, man, your life is going to change completely.
That's what everyone has said. What was the biggest change for you?
We had our first kid pretty early into our marriage. And at times we're like, well, maybe we should have done more things together before. But now I'm thinking, like, looking back, I'm like, I'm glad we had a kid early. We were both married early and like we had children early. So I'm like, okay, it's kind of nice because one, I'll be young when they're older, so we can do things athletically. Because I had my dad, I think, was almost 40 or maybe older when he had me. So like, we never had like that. Oh, let's go play catch, because you know it was always like, couldn't do that. But for it's just like things you used to be able to do together. It's just changes, like traveling. Like last year, I had to go visit my dad because he was in the hospital. And it was like, all right, let's go get the stroller. Let's get the diaper bag. Let's get all the stuff. And things that used to be so simple, I was like, hey, let's just jump in the car and go to the airport. And now it's like, jump in the car. Do we have a bottle? Oh, we forgot a pacifier. We got to go drive, because you can't forget that. So all these little things you just start to learn. And it's amazing. Like, I wouldn't change it for the world.
That's awesome, man. How many kids do you guys have now?
Three. Two boys and a girl. So we just had a daughter a year ago.
Congrats, man.
Yeah.
Congrats. Okay. I got to hear what's biggest piece of advice. First kid and a daughter.
Our first two kids were boys. And then we were like, okay, we want a girl. And then, but we didn't really want more than three kids. We're like, I hope this is a girl. And you know, thinks it was, but I'll tell you this, man, every kid's different. And the personalities, you'll learn as you have more kids, if that's, you know, in your future and stuff like that, but the personalities are different and every kid is different. And all the advice that people give you, like, oh, I did this with my kid, I did this with my, everyone's different. Like it, what works for one person is not going to work for you. I can say do this with your kids, and it might not work for your kid. So everything's different. So yeah. I don't know. I would just say just, you know, do it. Follow your heart. You know, pray about it. Be the best dad you can be, because that's all I can. That's my best advice, is just trust God, because it's not easy being a parent.
Yeah. Well, that's great advice, man. And that's something that I respect. It is always funny because I love asking people for just, hey, what's, you know, you've been down the path before me, you know, throw me a line, help me avoid something that was hard for you. And it is funny. Sometimes people will be like, oh, you gotta do this.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, that's super cool that they shared that, because that's coming from a place of a lesson that they had to learn probably the hard way, you know? And then at the same time, it's like, well, every kid is different. So I'm going to take that, and then I'm going to figure out what works for us. So
yeah. You just take all these different advice. Yeah. You just take all these different advices that you get, and then you just try what works best. And then just recognize that, like everything, especially in baseball, you're going to fail, and just grow from that. There's no perfect parent. So, I mean, it's just, you just learn on the job. It's literally what it is. It's funny because, like, I've never been a dad before. And then it's like, now you have a kid. It's like, oh, okay. Learn on the job. Like, there's no parenting made simple on YouTube that I can watch.
Maybe someone should start that.
After a year or two of you being a dad, let me know. Maybe we'll start that together.
There we go. That would make a good podcast, honestly. We could probably get some great people on there.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
That'd be really
cool. I'm going to make a mental note to think about that. And that's like, I'm always looking for more ideas to like do content and stuff. So that's definitely something I'll keep in the back of my mind. But speaking of Catching Made Easy, like, where did that come about? Like, what made you decide to create content?
That's a great question. I have always loved to create and share and give messages and communicate. Like, that is one of my favorite things. So that's always been in me ever since I was a kid. And then in terms of catching, I mean, ever since I learned all that, this stuff, and I went through the transition, you know, like I'm able to communicate that really well because of that, probably better than a lot of catchers that have caught their whole life, because they didn't have to necessarily figure out how to articulate it and learn as quickly as I did, because they had, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years more runway than me in learning. And so, so the catching side, that's always been a passion for me since I transitioned as well, because like, I know the pain that people go through, at like such like a gut level. Like I know how hard it is. I know what it feels like to struggle. I remember I had that problem. This is how I fixed it. So that part just like comes out, really naturally. And then, you know, it's cool. I was creating content on LinkedIn, like business content, for a while, maybe like a year, 2 years before this catching opportunity came up. And so I had like built out systems. I had figured out, you know, how do you make a good hook? How do you continually like capture ideas and put it into a system to get something out of it? How do you build relationships with people on social networks? And then all of a sudden I was at my job and my boss told me, hey, stop posting on LinkedIn, focus on your job, which was the greatest thing that I needed to hear. But I was also like, I want to go learn how to do this, because I think this is going to be valuable. Mm-hmm. And like, I think that this is a really important skill to learn, just in terms of like where I think short form video is going and you know, how education plays a role in like, in just educating the marketplace. And there now there's more catching people out there, which is great, but you know, there haven't been necessarily a ton of like dynamic catching communicators. Mm-hmm. And catching is so skill specific. It's so hard to find good information about it. I was like, man, I would love to share what I've learned with people. And then really kind of the final nail in the coffin per se is Cruz, one of my good friends that I played with at Biola. Now he's Coach Rack on TikTok or Cruz in California on Instagram. But we were in each other's weddings. He got super big on TikTok because he got picked up as a free agent. He told his dad starts crying. He goes super viral. And then he gets released and he starts making coaching videos. And this is something too that I'd love to get into a little bit, but like how skills compound on one another. Yeah. And he was previously really interested in photography and like Photoshop and editing and graphic design and all this stuff. And so he had this kind of toolkit that most baseball players don't have, in terms of that creative side. And then he brought that into video, and then he just blew up. And then he gave me a camera and taught me how to edit. And I already had all the content. I had the systems. I had all of that. And so as soon as he gave me the camera, taught me how to write a good hook for TikTok. Like we went, got some quick feedback loops from each other. And then it took off. I was at 10K in a week. My second video that I posted had like 1.3 million views. Wow. And then now I'm at 30,000. I've been doing it for a little longer, maybe like 4 months.
That's crazy. That's a big jump for just doing it for 4 months or so.
Yeah. You know, it is crazy, man. I think like the timing of all of it was perfect. Like I don't think if I posted those same videos today, it would have been as explosive. Hmm.
Why is that, do you think?
Well, I've posted them again and they haven't done as well, which maybe that's because there's like duplicate content or whatever. Sure. But, also I think that there's just been so many more people that I've been posting that the algorithm isn't as like
pushing out your content as much.
Yeah. And I think also is because it was like my second video, like they're trying to test whether it's good or not. Mm-hmm. And this is actually super crazy. So 1.3 million views. Okay. It's like a 59-second video. Guess how many hours of watch time that is?
How many viewers?
1.3 million views of essentially a minute long video.
400 hours?
Dude, it's like 13,000 hours.
Jeez. Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. And is to think about that people are viewing your content 1300 hours or whatever it may be. That's kind of it's mind-boggling sometimes.
Yeah, no, 13,000 hours.
Yeah, 13,000 hours. That's it's mind-boggling.
It's crazy. And
what was your initial reaction when you saw that? Because I mean, I'm sure when you got the camera from Coach Rack, you're thinking to yourself, "Man, maybe is this really what it's?" But then you see the success you immediately have. Like, what were you thinking then?
I was like, "Oh, it's game on! It's game on and game over! Like, let's go! Let's turn this thing on!" That was my mindset at that point. But kind of to your point, when I saw that 13,000 hours, I was like, oh my gosh, that is crazy. Mm-hmm. And then later on, I was talking with some of the people that were watching my videos. Mm-hmm. And there was this dad that I connected with in Alabama. And we were talking and he was like, "Hey, I watch your videos with my son before bed every night."
Oh, wow.
And as soon as he told me that, I was like, no way. That is so cool because like that goes beyond baseball, right? That's helping a dad connect with his son in a thing that they care about. And when I heard that, I was like, man, this is it, man. This is cool. I'm going to keep doing this. Like, this is what it's about right here. Because yeah, it's one thing to teach the game, but it's one thing to teach the skills of how to be a better catcher. But really it's about like, how do you become a better man? How can you build the things that are going to last, right? Everyone's going to hang up their cleats at some point, but they're all going to have their relationship with their parents, hopefully. They're all going to learn to work. So maybe if they can learn how to do content creation, they'll be better at their work. They'll be more valuable in the marketplace. They'll be able to provide more for their family. So yeah, that's the stuff that I'm really passionate about. I just use catching to like get there.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you talked about compound skills. Explain a little bit more, because you said you want to touch on that, or maybe you just did, but like what does that mean to you, compound skills in content creating?
This is like one of my favorite ideas right now. So basically, right, you have like a bunch of different skills. So if you look at, let's use Cruz. Cruz is one of my favorite examples for this, because, right, when he was young, he did gymnastics, which gave him like incredible athleticism, core strength. Like he can do backflips really easily, right? So his body sequences really well. So he's a greater athlete. Then he also gets into photography. So he learns how to use a camera, how to like make a good shot, you know, and then he also learns how to edit using Photoshop, learns how to make the colors pop. And then he learns how to go play college baseball. Right. So he gets that skill. Then he goes and he plays professional baseball, gets that skill. He ran a social media for the Biola FCA and gets the social media skill. And then all of a sudden, you know, he makes that one TikTok, he blows up. Now he comes and he adds in the short form video skill, and then how to write a good hook skill, and then how to use cuts and zooming to capture attention skill. And then he has his communication skill. And so it's like, it's the culmination, it's the compounding of all of them that then lead to like this highly valuable skill set. But it's not just one of them. Like they all stack on top of each other, and it gets exponentially more valuable the more skills that you stack on top of it. And so I, when I'm talking to young guys, I'm always like, hey, if there's something that is interesting, go pursue that, because you don't know how that's going to come out later in life. You know, like Cruz's photography stuff, who would have known that, you know, 10 years later, he's doing TikToks and is crushing it. And, you know, making a living off of that. So really, really crazy.
That's awesome. And good for him for kind of getting you that push that maybe you needed, so that you can in turn, you know, use your compound skills of learning how to catch and creating social media content to kind of do your own thing, which is pretty cool. In terms of creating content, how do you find inspiration for the videos that you post? Are these just questions that maybe people ask you, or are there just things that you struggled with and you're like, okay, this is going to benefit others?
Honestly, my brain is an idea machine, and my wife kind of gets tired of it sometimes, because I'm like, my brain is just always going. But yes, a big part of it too is like listening to customers, or listening to people, really, what kinds of questions they're asking, what doesn't make sense to them. And then I take that feedback and I'm like, okay, how do I need to explain it to this person so they understand why this is valuable? And, but yeah, I have like a whole like kind of process of how I create them and stuff. And I have so many videos that just are ideas as of right now. So hopefully I'll get to all of them.
And that's how my brain is too. Like even at night, like my brain won't shut off. Like I'll be up late thinking like, oh man, like I'm gonna have so-and-so on, like there's so many things I can't wait to talk to this individual about, or just things of that nature. Like my brain won't shut off to a point where it's almost like a fault where I'm like, okay, I want to go to bed, but like I have so much things I'm thinking about all the time. So yeah, I definitely hear you on that side. And also my wife sometimes is the same way. So I understand how you feel there. They probably can relate in certain terms like that.
Yeah. I think anyone who's, and this is another thing too, like, I think everyone's brain is like that to an extent. It's just a matter of how well you're able to capture it and how really fascinated you are by the thing that you're thinking about. You know, if it's not interesting to you, then you're not going to come up with a bunch of ideas and how it connects to other ideas. But if it is interesting to you, then your brain is crazy, man. It'll come up with all this stuff, and then you just got to figure out a way to capture it so that it doesn't escape.
Do you ever have like imposter syndrome, just thinking like, all right, I was a catcher for such a short time, or maybe a content creator for such a short time, and now millions of people are watching what I'm doing? Young kids, fathers with their kids. Do you ever just think like, all right, or even just have that, like, imposter syndrome?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yes and no. And I think especially when I was playing, I did. Because, and this is actually something interesting that I've noticed. There's a lot of content creators that are done playing, and, you know, they don't have to go out on the field and produce anymore, right? And there's a lot of young content creators where really it's the parents that are creating the content.
Yeah.
But you don't really see that many high school, college, pro guys, except for a lot of the guys that were at NYABC, right? Mm-hmm. Sam Carlson, you know, the Savannah Bananas guys. Ian Jenkins is still playing. Like, those are really kind of the few people that are playing. There's another guy, mm-hmm. Aaron Antonini, catcher for the Cardinals organization, that I really like. He's super cool. But yeah, it's really fascinating to me because, you know, if you are playing and you are creating mm-hmm. content, then it's like you better have your stuff together. Otherwise you're going to get eaten alive by coaches, by teammates, by the other team, you know? And I think that prevents a lot of people from just documenting what they're learning and sharing that story. I don't have as much imposter syndrome now because, like, I know I'm really good at communicating and teaching people how to catch. And so, like, I'm very confident in that. You know, we made a video at NYABC of, like, kind of roasting the other coaches. And they were like, what should we do for you? And I was like, I'm pretty sure I led the conference in pass balls, like, one or both years that I caught. And so it's like, I look back on that now and I'm like, hey, I had a great ride, man. Mm-hmm. And I'm not like ashamed of it or anything, but definitely while I was playing, there was definitely that like, man, how could I ever talk on this if I have, you know, a ton of pass balls, you know? Now looking back, it's like, oh yeah, yeah. Whatever. I learned how to catch when I was in college and it was awesome. I learned a lot and hopefully I'm going to help you in your journey.
Yeah. And then speaking of content creators who are baseball players, Lucas Gilbreth, a pitcher in the Colorado Rockies. Cool. I don't know if you follow him, but definitely check him out because he does a great.
Yeah, he
puts out a ton of cool content. I've had him on. Really good guy. Like, I asked him, kind of funny thing. I asked him because he put out something on TikTok about reading mean tweets. And so he was just reading all these mean tweets and he's like, you know what? We see the comments that you're leaving for us as pitchers. And he told me that I asked, what's the funniest DM you've got? And he's like, I've had so many weird ones, but one guy messaged me saying, hey dude, you lost me $200 and now I don't have anything left. And he's like, so what am I supposed to do with that? Like, don't bet on me. Like, my bad. I didn't mean to lose you $200. And if that's all you had, why are you betting that? So it's just funny, but he puts out a ton of cool content. So definitely look up Lucas Gilbreth because he's a really good guy. Like I said, I've had him on the pod. Super, super fun guy. One thing I wanted to end on is the camp that you did. Like, what went into the creation of that camp and, like, what's the future of the camp?
Yeah, great question. So how it started was I was talking with one of my mentors and I was telling him about the story of the dad in Alabama who's watching my videos with his son, who's learning to catch. And I'm like, this is so cool. And, you know, that was a big part of my story growing up was, you know, I spent a ton of time with my dad at the field. That was like our main connection point was through baseball. And that's probably true for a lot of people. Right. Mm-hmm. Then I was telling Cruz about it and we were like, no way, dude, that was how you got big on TikTok, was your thing with your dad too. And we were like, we should do a father son camp.
Oh, cool.
Do like a retreat where it's like, you know, we get these people to come and stay and we can just like pour into them and their kids and really equip them with some great tools for life. And then as we were thinking about that more, we were like, dude, what if we dreamt like really big? Like, what if we created the most epic baseball camp ever? Like, what would happen? Who would be there? What would the environment be like? What would we do? And we just started dreaming and dreaming and dreaming. And then we were actually in my office right here, and it was me, Cruz, and my wife, and she was like, well, you know, it's not your average baseball camp. And me and Cruz both look at each other and we're like, dude, that's it. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we named it, and then we went forward with it, and it was an awesome experience, dude. It was so cool. It was beyond what we thought, because the coaches had an incredible experience. It was like a retreat experience for a lot of these coaches, getting around other people that were like mm-hmm. them. Multiple people cried as we were all hanging out together, just because they were like, this has been incredible. So it like reminded me of like a church retreat, you know, that you go on.
Yeah.
And it was just so cool to build the relationships. And then, you know, the kids had an awesome time. All the parents that we talked to were like, hey, we haven't seen anything like this before. This was a different type of camp. Mm. And so it was awesome. And then I think what is next, Cruz and I were just talking about this last night, but we're probably going to do like, we'll call it like not your average baseball training. And do like some training, like some with some younger kids and some with like some high school kids, and really focus on like what type of development do you need? What type of habits do you need to build? Like if you really do want to go play, and again, with the intent of, hey, we're going to use baseball to teach them these life skills that are going to last way beyond baseball. And then we're going to do another camp. We'll probably do like biannual camps, like winter, not your average baseball camp, summer, not your average baseball camp. So I think that's the game plan for right now.
Have you thought about doing with Coach Ballgame does, as he goes to like different cities all over and just setting up different camps, even though his are probably more short term. But I mean, I feel like if you guys can just travel to like Milwaukee and then like Georgia and Colorado, whatever it may be, Texas, and just set these up, like there'd be so much. Because there's probably kids who are like, man, I wish I could have gone to California, but I'm in like Florida.
A ton of DMs. But yeah, I mean, definitely that could be in the cards in the future. So not right now. But we've definitely gotten quite a few DMs saying, hey, when are you coming to Texas? When are you coming to the East Coast? When are you coming to, you know, all wherever, these central states? Yeah, we've gotten a lot of DMs about that. But not right now. That's not the plan yet.
How did you get the coaches on board? I mean, obviously, you had a ton of content creators. Sam was a current pro player for the Mariners. You had a bunch of really cool, like, content creators. Like how did you pitch that idea to them? Like, hey, this is not your average baseball camp, but in a good way.
Yeah. So it was a lot of like, hey, let's DM them. They followed either me or Cruz mostly. More of them followed Cruz because he's freaking huge on all these platforms. And so we got their phone numbers, and then what we did was we essentially sent them a video text and said, hey, this is what we're thinking. We want to have you at this camp. Here are some of the other people that are already coming. What do you think? Are you in? And they were all super pumped about it. So it was really cool, man. It was really cool.
That's awesome. And like I said, I talked to Drew about it, and he said that it was one of the greatest experiences he's ever had. And I mean, he said it was just an incredible experience to see how the kids and their reaction to it, the parents and their reaction, and then just being around other baseball people for a couple of days. Like he said, it's almost like a retreat for them as well. So that's super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, man. It was one of the coolest things. And it was also crazy. Like, again, when you think about skills compounding, right? The amount of work that we had to do to put that camp in, to get it off the ground, was very substantial. We were working a lot. Our wives are awesome because they let us just like grind on this thing. And, you know, now it's off the ground, so it's easier. There's not all the hard work right at the beginning, but, Yeah, it was tough at the beginning, and it took a lot of work. But, you know, I had done a lot of like the website stuff with Catching Made Simple already. Mm-hmm. And it had taken me like 3 months to figure out all this stuff. And then once I had learned that skill, it was like I could just turn it on for Not Your Average Baseball Camp. And I got that site live mm-hmm. and all the things that needed to happen in like a week.
Wow.
So it took like 3 months of learning the first time and then into a week of like, you know, so like that's another aspect of like how the skills compound too. Like you get better as you go. Mm-hmm. And the things that you learn are helping you in the things that are ahead. So,
yeah. My last question for you, and that's awesome. Like, and I'm excited to see where you guys go from here. For those who want to get into content creating, what is one advice that you would give them?
One advice? That's a great question. I would say, so I think the biggest thing that stops people from creating is shame. Hmm. Because they're worried that they're not good enough. Who are they to talk about this? If they talk about it, they're going to get made fun of, you know, like, and I think shame is truly the biggest problem to creating, because when you do create, you put yourself out there, which exposes you, which lets you get hit,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're oftentimes they're afraid that they couldn't do a good job. They couldn't communicate as persuasively. They couldn't, you know, they couldn't figure out how to write a script or whatever. They think that it's going to be bad, and they think that then it's going to be a reflection of them being bad. And so I think the biggest thing is you just got to figure out how to get over that shame, and just like you got to understand that the opportunity on the other side of creating is so much greater than any sort of, you know, like shame that you might experience at first. And you have to also remember that if you're going to do something, like, if you haven't done it before, like, you should expect to be bad at first.
Yeah.
You know, like people forget that. Like they look at Cruz, for example, they're like, man, how can I make a video like him? Like, well, he's been making a video every day for months and months and months. And that's why his videos look like that now. Like, you know, you're going to be bad at first, and you have to expect that and know that you can get better at it. And then I guess final thing, this isn't one thing, so I'm sorry, but the last thing that I would say is it's the start that stops most people. And so like, if you can just get going, mm-hmm. then like, then you can, you know, you can steer the moving ship, but you can't steer it if it's not going anywhere.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because, I can't remember where I heard it, but I think it was like the number of episodes that most podcasts do and then stop is like 7 or 8 or something like that. There's like millions of podcasts out there, but there's like only 10% are active or something like that. And I'm probably butchering the percentages, but it's a very few. And the same thing goes for any type of content that you're creating. It's just that like initial, like putting yourself out there for people to see you, and that fear of like, what is somebody going to think of me? And things of that nature. That's awesome advice for you, and it's a great way to end this.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica, empathy is our best policy.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.